The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mike Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Armchair Traveler. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the News and Observer. Now, before we begin our journey on today's Armchair Traveler, please let me remind you that neither the North Carolina Reading Service nor I are endorsing any of the cruises, safaris, tours, or other travel itineraries that might be featured in the articles that we're going to be reading. These are selected simply for your enjoyment and edification. Today on Armchair Traveler, we visit sites where movies are made, and we even have some tips on how to be part of a movie being made in North Carolina. Now, our first stop should be familiar to many people, the Biltmore Estate in Asheville. It's a remarkable French Renaissance castle built by George Vanderbilt. Brooke Kane's article, Hallmark is filming a new Christmas movie at a North Carolina landmark. What we know, this was published in the December 25th, 2022 online edition of the News and Observer. Asheville's Biltmore Estate will be the setting of a new Hallmark Christmas movie scheduled to be premiered this year. The news was first reported by Variety. Production on the movie, titled A Biltmore Christmas, is set to begin this month, Variety reported. The movie is not yet listed on the North Carolina Film Office website, but will film entirely on the Biltmore Estate, says Variety. The estate, built by George Vanderbilt, has always had a strong Christmas vibe. Construction started in 1889 and was first opened to Vanderbilt friends and family on Christmas Eve in 1895, according to the Biltmore Estate. A major tourist attraction year-round, the estate is especially popular during Christmas when it is decked to the hilt with holiday trim. Hallmark isn't the first to film at the Biltmore Estate. Among the most significant Biltmore-filmed movies is Being There, a highly acclaimed 1979 dark comedy starring Peter Sellers and Melvin Douglas. Douglas won the Oscar for Best Supporting Actor for the film, and Sellers was nominated for Best Actor. The Biltmore House is the grand estate belonging to Douglas's character, where Sellers' character recovers after an accident. Why Biltmore is perfect for Hallmark. Here are just a few facts about the North Carolina landmark, courtesy of the Biltmore Estate, that demonstrate why it's a perfect Hallmark setting. The house is huge. The mansion itself is 175,000 square feet, about 4 acres of floor space, with 250 rooms, 35 bedrooms, 43 bathrooms, and 65 fireplaces. The house is fancy. On display inside the French Renaissance Chateau is the Vanderbilt family's original collection of art and furniture. The grounds are massive. The mansion sits on 8,000 acres of land. That's 125,000 acres when Vanderbilt first owned it, but parts have been sold to the U.S. government to establish Pisgah National Forest. The gardens are extraordinary. Of the current 8,000 acres, 75 of those are formal and informal gardens designed by renowned American landscape architect Frederick Law Olmsted. And if I might inject, it's not in the article itself, the Biltmore Library is worth the time. It is interesting indeed. Floor to ceiling, and I do mean multiple, like two stories worth of books. And the Biltmore has its own winery. The estate also boasts a winery thanks to the foresight of George Vanderbilt's grandson, William A.V. Cecil. He began planting grapevines in the early 1970s, and the winery was established in 1985. What we know about a Biltmore Christmas Hallmark movie. The movie will star Bethany Joy Lentz and Christopher Poloha. Lentz's character is named Lucy Collins, and Poloha's character is Jack Houston. The plot of the movie, from Variety, Lucy Collins is a screenwriter hired to remake a beloved holiday classic movie that was filmed in 1947 at the Biltmore Estate. Now, she goes to the Biltmore to do research and is drawn to a beautiful hourglass inside the house. She accidentally knocks it over and is transported back in time to 1946 during the filming of His Merry Bride. The star of the 1946 film is Jack Houston, who is drawn to Lucy, and the two eventually fall in love. But her presence in the past threatens the production of the movie, and she must make things right or threaten to alter the future forever. As for the love story, Lucy has one chance to go home but must say goodbye to the man who might be her soulmate, unless some Christmas magic can keep the curtain from closing on their love story. Hallmark fans will know Lentz from One Tree Hill and from other Hallmark movies, Poinsettias for Christmas, Royal Matchmaker, Five Star Christmas, A Valentine Match, and An Unexpected Christmas. Paloha is very familiar to Hallmark fans. He has been in seven Hallmark movies and is star of the seven-part Hallmark Movies and Mysteries film, Mystery 101, which, by the way, also stars Joe Wagner, a North Carolina native from Winston-Salem. So there you go. Kind of an interesting background there for moviegoers. Now, have you ever thought about being in a movie? Well, it so happens that our next article is going to offer you some tips on how to make it to the big screen right here in the Tar Heel State. How to be an extra in Hallmark Christmas Movie at Biltmore is written by Corey Dean and appeared in the January 2nd, 2023 online edition of the News and Observer. If you ever wanted to be in a Hallmark Christmas movie, this could be your chance. The Casting Office Incorporated, a Southeast-based casting agency, announced this week, and that would have been in the first week of the year, an open call for background performers or extras to be part of a Biltmore Christmas, a Hallmark movie that will be filmed and set in the iconic Asheville Mansion. The movie, which is set to begin production in January 2023, will star Bethany Joy Lentz and Christopher Paloha, both of whom have several acting credits with the Hallmark Network. While Lentz and Paloha will be front and center throughout the film, being an extra in the film could be your chance to have your own 15 seconds of fame, so to speak. So how can you become an extra in the movie, and what's involved in being an extra? Well, here's what you need to know. How to apply to be an extra in a Biltmore Christmas. If you're interested in being an extra in a Biltmore Christmas, you'll need to submit an online application through the casting office's website at thecastingofficeinc.com. That's thecastingofficeinc.com. The website includes lots of information about the application process, as well as information about what is involved in being an extra. The casting office asks applicants to read all the information before submitting the application. After you read all of the necessary information, the website includes an application form to fill out. The application asks you for basic information, such as your name, age, gender, plus other information, such as your clothing measurements, vaccination status, and whether you have any special talents or abilities. The application also requires you to submit two unedited photos of yourself, a smiling headshot and a full-length photo that includes your entire body. Once you've filled out the application, click the submission button at the bottom. Applications are not accepted by email or social media, so you got to go online and do it there. Do you need any experience to be an extra? No experience is required to be an extra in a Biltmore Christmas, the casting office says. People of all backgrounds, including ages, races, and genders, are needed as extras in the film, the agency's website says. But if you're cast as an extra, you will need to commit to the schedule set by the production and be able to follow directions. Days on set of the film could last between 12 to 14 hours, and extras need to be available for the entire day. You must arrive as early as needed and stay as late or as long as needed, reporting to set with a willingness to listen and work with positive attitude, the casting office website says. How many extras will be cast in the film? It's unclear how many extras will be cast in A Biltmore Christmas, but the casting office wrote in a Facebook post on December 29, 2022, that thousands of applications have been submitted since the open call was announced. The Post said the agency has been reviewing applications over the holidays and is working to fill the remaining roles. While we are beyond grateful for the outpouring of interest, please understand that we are unable to respond to individual emails or social media messages regarding the status of your submissions, the Post read. If you don't get cast as an extra in this film, though, you may have other chances for time on camera. Since lots of TV shows and movies film in North Carolina, there are plenty of opportunities for background talent in the state. And I would direct you to a couple of things to think about. You may want to Google Wilmington and its sound studios, where they do several TV shows and as well as movies. Also in Georgia, which has an extensive outlay of sound studios outside of Atlanta. So both of those would be worth your time if you're interested in this. Now let's learn more about what A Biltmore Christmas is all about. The News and Observer previously reported the plot of A Biltmore Christmas. Lentz stars as Lucy Collins, a screenwriter hired to remake a beloved holiday classic movie filmed in 1947 at the Biltmore Estate. Now she goes to the Biltmore to do research and is drawn to a beautiful hourglass inside the house, and as we reported earlier, she accidentally knocks it over and then transported back in time to 1946 when the filming of His Merry Bride was underway. The star of the 46 film is Jack Houston, played by Paloha. Hudson is drawn to Lucy, and the two eventually, or Houston, I should say, is drawn to Houston, but her presence in the film threatened the production of the movie, and she must make things right and threatened to alter the future forever. Lucy has one chance to go home, a must-see goodbye to the man who might be her soulmate, unless some Christmas magic can keep the curtain from closing on their love story. So, there you go. That's just a fun thing to do there. So if you're thinking about traveling to the Biltmore Estate, you may want to do that and just see how much fun there's going to be. So this is a great, great opportunity for people who are interested and also working with some great stars for the Hallmark series. Now, let's move on here to the next stop, and it's already a part of HBO's lineup. It's Sicily, where the series The White Lotus is based. As you can tell now, we have a theme in today's show, an ultimate White Lotus itinerary for Italian holiday. This one appeared in the January 1st, 2023 online edition of the News and Observer. It was written as a special to the Washington Post by Erica Furpo. Sicily is a Mediterranean paradise where beauty, culture, and history converge. A magical land forged by the mercurial Mount Etna, one of the world's most active volcanoes. Etna's dominating presence metaphorically divides the island into an idyllic east and bustling west. It's the volcano's mythology and volatility that make Sicily the perfect setting for the latest of HBO's The White Lotus. If this season has inspired you to plan your own Italian holiday, we've gathered the real-life White Lotus locations from Sicily's east to west, plus all sites guests missed while stabbing each other in the back. We're going to start with East Sicily. Hopefully it's tamer there. The White Lotus Hotel. Tanya and her assistant Portia and the rest of the tormented White Lotus guests disembark in Tormina, the coastal hill town so close to Mount Etna that the Greeks made it a backdrop for the Teatro Greco, an ancient theater. The subsequent centuries bequeathed Roman, medieval, and Baroque architecture to create a postcard-perfect destination, including the Four Seasons San Domenico Palace, the real-life hotel that serves as the White Lotus. Now, perched on the cliffs overlooking the Ionian Sea, San Domenico Palace was formerly a 14th-century convent. It's as luxurious as you'll see in the small screen, 111 rooms and suites, panoramic views, courtyards and gardens with old-world charm. The hotel's white tablecloth restaurant is a nightly backdrop in the show, so much so that it makes you wonder why guests aren't out experiencing the rest of Sicily's dining scene. Even Cameron points out in one episode, and we quote here, "I don't know why they keep giving us these menus. We know it back to front by now, but at least it's not the average flavorless hotel restaurant. It's the Michelin-starred Principe Salami with Sicily-inspired dishes and a view." Well, the crew can also be seen at Anchovy, San Domenico's Palace's pool terrace restaurant, La Cambosa, a beachside restaurant, and a bar in nearby Giardini's Naxos is used as the White Lotus Beach Club. Then there's Bar and Chiostro, the piano bar in the show, which features a cocktail called the Gelosio de Mandolino, inspired by Elizabeth Taylor and Richard Burton's famous explosive fight at the hotel. But the guests are missing out on nearby gems by only hotel dining. The Michelin-starred Otto Galeg at the Hotel Tomeo, beachside La Campanera, and the quaint Tishi Toshi. Oh, my goodness. And that is all seaside. With about 922 miles of coastline, it's no wonder the beach plays a supporting role in the show. Some of eastern Sicily's most picturesque beaches are just off Tormina, like Isola Bella, a small island connected by the mainland by a narrow path. Some of the beach scenes, however, were filmed in the Sandir Cefalo, which is located in northern Sicily. There are also small coastal towns to explore that dot Sicily's coastline, such as Lottoiani, Ferci Sicilo, and Giari. The Godfather, in Episode 3, Albie, Bert, and Dominic make an excursion to Fumfredio de Sicilia, to the Palacio Gastelio delle Schiava Villa, the famed Godfather home and hideout for Michael Corleone, where his first wife, Apollonia, is killed. Meanwhile, just north of Termania is the tiny village of Savoca, where the Granite de Limon, a lemon or frozen lemon treat at Bar Vitelli, are divine, and the backdrop is a step back in time. It's also a good test of your Italian, my friends. Then we have Etna. The altitude, intense sunlight, and notable temperature differentials make Etna the place for winemaking. Take a tip from Harper, Ethan, Cameron, and Daphne, minus the awkward tension, and go to Passapo Piscadio for a day of wine testing at Planetas Fuero de Mezzo, an estate on Etna's northern slope. Etna is an inimitable terroir unique to the world. Vito Planeta, head of Planeta's cultural project, said in an email, "Remarkable temperature ranges, mineral-rich volcanic soils, a mountain viticulture with great personality, and a concentration of beauty, nature, and landscape," he wrote. For thrill seekers and volcano hunters, head to Nicolosi, a small town on the southern slope. Go Etna's organizes guided volcano excursions and off-roading vehicles. Again, the name of the company is Go Etna. And trekking excursions also included on that list, and you'll step into a landscape of fumaroles and craters. So lots of nature to see there. Now, inland. While the Sicilian coast is gorgeous, inland is worth exploring, especially the Val di Noto in southeastern Sicily. Of the eight towns, top of the list are Noto, Modica, and Ragusa in Triumvirate of Sicilian Baroque. Each city feels like a fairy tale with ornate cathedrals and palaces of yellow sandstone. On Daphne and Harper's trip to Noto, they take in the architecture but miss out on foodie landmark Cafe Sicilia, where chef Corrado Assenza creates Sicily's very best Sicilian cassate, a traditional cake and cannoli. Just outside of Noto is Villa Elena, interior designer Jacques Garcia's home, which is used as Quentin's villa in Palermo. Pop over to Modica, a city built into a gorge with labyrinth streets and stairwells that connect its Alta or High and Bassa Low neighborhoods. Modica is the epicenter of Sicily's chocolate. Cioccolato di Modica is an IGP, protected by geographical location product, whose history stems back to centuries-old Spanish techniques. For a taste, head to Antica do Salerno, Bonajuto, where they spend more than 100 years making chocolate bars and confections. Quite a history there. In West Sicily, Etna, though located more eastern, is the great divide for Sicily. Eastern Sicily has a personality that reflects the energy of Etna, tenacity and determination, says Agata Polizzi, an art historian and Palermo native. Palermitani, or perhaps more easygoing. Now, remember, we didn't grow up under the active volcano, but instead, for centuries, Palermo was the capital kingdom of two Sicilies and always been the center of culture. Now, Palermo is bustling, beautiful, and a completely different vibe from coastal and hill towns. Located in the northwest of Sicily, the port city has opened its doors to everyone since its foundation, which shaped Sicilian history, architecture, and culture from the ancient Phoenicians to contemporary artists. The old city center is Sicilian decadence with remnants of palaces and centuries-old street markets, while its outskirts calm down with promenades and beaches. Vecchio Centro is the historic center, where you'll find iconic crossroads, Quattro Canti, Palermo Cathedral, Norman Palace, also called Royal Palace, the historic Busseria and Ballero markets, as well as Piazza Marina, the city's ancient square and port. Northwest neighborhood Ziza, named for the medieval Moorish palace La Ziza, has become an arts hub with Cantieri Culturali alla Ziza, formerly factories and warehouses, and Sa Centrale, and contemporary art center. And Polatima is the contemporary city center and home to the Teatro Massimo Opera House, where Tanya takes in Madama Butterfly. Lots to see there in Sicily, my friends. Well, now we're going to go traveling in a van. Okay, we're going to just take a 180-degree turn here, because this is not just any van. It's one that became part of a TikTok video in early December. The story began to unfold when some passengers learned that their flight had been canceled. After the flight canceled, 13 strangers got a van and drove. This story, written by Kathy Free of the Washington Post, it was published in the December 23, 2022 online edition of the News and Observer. Alana's story was headed home to Knoxville, Tennessee, after a family vacation in Orlando when she and other passengers waiting to board Frontier Airlines Flight 1222 received some bad news. Their flight had been canceled, and there wouldn't be another flight to Knoxville for 48 hours. Story said a customer service agent told them it was because of a staffing issue. Story, 23, was traveling with her mom and her godmother that evening, December 4th, and said that she initially thought there were worse things than spending 2 days lounging and drinking margaritas at a hotel pool in Florida, but her mom wanted to get home. So did lots of other passengers. One of them, Amy Sad, said, "If anyone wants to go in on renting a bus or van, come over," Story recalled. She and her family hurried over with 9 other passengers. In all, 13 strangers decided to chip in $60 each to rent a 15-passenger van from Hertz, then drive through the night for more than 10 hours to Knoxville in eastern Tennessee. Before they piled in at around 10 p.m., Story posted a short video on TikTok with comments from everyone in the group. Most of them seemed excited about the idea of making a road trip with people they'd only just met minutes before. "We're going to do cars, trucks, planes, and automobiles. We're going to get ourselves where we got to go tonight," Sad, 54, said in the video. "I'm the farm babe from Florida, and I'm the keynote speaker at a convention in Knoxville on Tuesday," said another passenger, Michelle Miller, 40. "So we're going to go, and I'm going to make my speech. They canceled our flight, but you know what? I don't argue," says Carlos Cordero, explaining he was on his way to Knoxville with his fiancée and her daughter for a campus tour at the University of Tennessee. "We're renting a van, and we're headed out there," he said. Cordero took the wheel, noting he was the number one driver, and as they headed north on the interstate, Story noticed her video was quickly racking up views. "It was crazy. We could hardly keep up with it," she said. "It seemed like the whole world wanted to track our trip." That two-minute video and several updates have now been viewed by 5 million viewers, Story said, noting that they made headlines around the world. They've even received calls from people in Hollywood who are interested in the story of how 13 strangers formed a bond on an unplanned road trip in the middle of the night. During the trip, Cordero did most of the driving, and the group stopped only a couple of times for bathroom breaks and snacks, said Miller, who is from Gainesville, Florida. "In the van, we shared what we do for a living and talked about our aspirations, but we mostly discussed all of the comments that were showing up on Alana's TikTok post," she said. "People are hungry for goodness, and we're happy to see a feel-good story." As farm babe, Miller travels across the country to help promote the importance of farming, she said. When her flight was canceled, she knew she had to find another way to make it to Knoxville, where she was scheduled to deliver an address at an agricultural event. "When I saw the long line at Frontier's customer service desk, I started thinking about other options," she said. "I asked them to put us on a bus, and they said they'd call a supervisor, but nobody showed up." Several days after Story's videos got traction online, Frontier Airlines issued a statement. "We sincerely apologize for the inconvenience caused by the flight cancellation. All customers had the option of waiting for the next available Frontier flight or receiving a full refund." Miller says she couldn't wait for the next flight, and it was impossible to get solid answers because Frontier recently did away with its customer service phone line, she said. When she heard Sad call for volunteers to chip in on renting a van, she didn't hesitate to raise her hand. Carlos said he'd put the rental bill on his credit card, so we all gave him $60 through cash or Venmo. "There were 5 rows in the van, and I sat in the very back," she said. Miller said she slept for less than an hour during the 652-mile-an-hour trip. Everyone was getting to know each other, she said. One of the passengers, Seth, was a minister, so he talked about religion and God for a little while. And a couple of the guys were farmers going to the same conference that I was. There was no need to turn on the radio, since Sad kept everyone entertained by shouting out how many views Story's post was getting, Miller added. We were all laughing at the comments, and we couldn't believe the attention it was getting, she said. If there was any music, it wasn't on for more than 30 seconds. When they finally pulled into Knoxville about 8:30 a.m., everyone was exhausted but jubilant, Miller said. We were grateful to have had the experience of being part of something that brought a lot of smiles to people, she said. We're all different, but we had a great time. What a great travel story. Well, in our final segment, we go back to 2020, when the pandemic made traveling very difficult. Writer Jason Farrago loves Paris. That's a frequent location for many movies since movie making began. So when travel restrictions made it hard to get to Paris, Farrago found an alternative route. His story, 10 French Movies That Can Transport You to Paris, appeared in the November 17, 2020 issue of the New York Times. And I'm just going to read you some excerpts from this wonderful article as we kind of return to our movie theme in a different fashion. Okay. And the headline subheadline reads, headline says, for 10 French Movies That Can Transport You to Paris, and then the subhead, with transatlantic travel all but suspended, the closest you can get to Paris may be on screen. These movies are going to take you there, and so we'll try to give you some idea of what those are. While your travel plans may be on hold, you can pretend you're somewhere new for the night. Around the World at Home invites you to channel the spirit of a new place each week with recommendations on how to explore the culture, all from the comfort of your home. America is my country and Paris is my hometown, wrote Gertrude Stein. Me, too, or well, almost. For the last few years, I was shuttling between New York and the French capital, where my now husband worked, and in that time, Paris came to feel like the city where I had history, whose streets I could navigate by muscle memory. Now that transatlantic travel is all but suspended, keep in mind this was the pandemic, the closest I can get to Paris is on screen, but luckily, the view is fantastic. Paris was the site of the first movie screening back in 1895 with the Lumiere brothers shot the first pictures in Lyon. It reminds the home of Europe's largest, most vibrant film industry. French exports more movies than any country, bar the United States. And here are some of the movies that she's going to recommend here, or Jason's going to recommend, I should say. Girlhood, 2014. Paris today is so much more than its touristic tree-lined core. It's continental Europe's most diverse city, where French mingles with the Arabic and Wolof, and you're more likely to hear Afro-trap than Edith Piaf. And this assured coming-of-age film by Celine Sciamma follows a young black teenager. She shuttles across the racial and economic and cultural divides between Paris proper and its suburban housing estates. Next movie, 35 Shots of Rum. This came out in 2008, a very intimate and Parisian film of Claire Davis, very probably France's greatest living director. Then we have Love Songs 2007, the near entirety of this Grey Street musical directed by Christophe Honoré and with a dozen tunes written by singer-songwriter Alex Beaupin. Then we have Full Moon in Paris, which was done in 1984. Also, Sacet Rendezvous, 1976. Cleo from 5 to 7 in 1962. Breathless in 1960. Beau Flambeur, 1956. Cascade d'Or, 1952. And Bandeau, Saved from Drowning, 1931. That's an interesting film, so you may want to check it out. And that, my friends, ends our journey on today's Armchair Traveler. Hope you've enjoyed it, and you'll be with us next time. I'm Mike Edwards, and I've been reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, and remind you the content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Armchair Traveler is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. That's ncreadingservice.org. Comments and questions can be directed to 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.